So if there are any questions, one or two questions, you can bring it up right now. Liverpool. Liverpool. Gerard.
Hello. Yeah, I've got one question here. 6.3. Conception of bad view as supreme. In this book, it mentioned conception of a bad view as supreme as one of the three views that is observed. But in the Lam Rim, it's mentioned differently. Lam Rim mentioned extremist view. But here it mentioned conception of bad view as supreme. Well, I just wonder, why is there a difference?
Different translation?
Mistake. Oh, I mean, should be view holding to an extreme instead of conception of bad view as supreme, right? Because the Lam Rim mentioned believe in the supremacy of wrong view. Okay, observe one of the three view of the perishing aggregate, which is the view of the transitory collection, and then extremist view, which is view holding to an extreme. And then a wrong view. So, there's a difference. So I just wonder, why is there a difference?
Differently?
Hello? Why?
On page 65, the three are listed there. Yeah.
Yeah. But differently, is it the same thing? Are they talking about the same thing?
Yeah, I think it's a different translation.
So, is it referring to view holding to extreme or conception of bad view as supreme? Because there's a difference there.
So in Tibetan is Tartar, which is a what you say extremist view, a view holding on to an extreme. Tata, view of the perishing aggregates. Okay, so if we go through these views again, yeah. So you have the view of the transitory collection. What does the view of the transitory collection, what does it observe? Yeah? It observes the appropriated aggregates, right? For observing the appropriated aggregates, an eye is conceived, yeah. And how is this eye apprehended? Eye is apprehended to exist, you know, something separate, different, independent of the body mind, right? So that is the view of the transitory collection, yeah. So the mind which apprehends or which conceives of the on the self or the I to be self-sufficient and substantially existent, yeah, the mind which conceives of the things of the I or the self as something, you know, independent of the body and mind, you know, right? As a, that mind is called the view of the transitory collection, you know. So does the I, which is conceived of by this view of the transitory collection, does it exist? Is there an I that is self-sufficient, substantially existent? No. So it's just a kind of self that is conceived by the view of the transitory collection, the self-sufficient, substantially existent I or person, right? And that kind of self does not exist. Therefore, that self does not exist. Therefore, it's selfless. So as we've you know, we talked about this on Tuesday, isn't it? If you look at the vast majority of the non-Buddhist traditions, you know, especially those who have their own philosophical systems, all of them, vast majority of them, of course, they do talk about an I or a person, right? But they all assert that there is a soul, that the I or the person is eternal, never changing, permanent, yeah, never changing, doesn't undergo change. It is unitary, single, and it is independent, yeah. Okay? So this is their belief, yeah. So the Buddhist position is that such a kind of soul, an unchanging I, an unchanging person, a person that is unitary and independent, does not exist whatsoever. Okay? On top of that, it is also the Buddhist position that the self or the I is not self-sufficient and it is not substantially existent.
답디
the mind which believes in this soul, and the mind which especially which believes, the mind which you know conceives of the person or the I to be self-sufficient, yeah. This mind is given the technical name, the view of the transitory collection. Okay, so when we talk about the self that is conceived of by this view of the transitory collection, it's not about somebody else's identity. It's one's own identity, one's own oneself, the I, the person existing in one's own continuum. So the view of the transitory collection apprehends one's the I in one's own continuum, and it apprehends the I to be self-sufficient, substantially existent. So such a mind is the view of the transitory collection. Yeah. So the view of the transitory collection does not refer to just any mind that conceives of the I to be self-sufficient. Rather, it's the I in one's own continuum. So such a mind is called the view of the transitory collection, and you could also call it an apprehension of a self, a person. Yeah. And this apprehension of a self, a person, is essentially the root of all the problems. It's the root of cyclic existence, yeah. And all the afflictions, all the other destructive emotions, all arise with this as the basis. So this is the view of the transitory collection. Yeah. So this is at least, you know, this is what you should be able to say. This is what you should understand. You know, you know, if you ask, you know, what on earth is the view of the transitory collection? At least you are able to you know, to say this. Yeah. Okay. Then you have the view holding on to an extreme, or it's translated as extremist view, yeah. So the view holding on to an extreme is a mind that observes the self that is held by the view of the transitory collection. Okay? The view holding on to extreme, what does it observe? It observes the I, the self, that is held by the view of the transitory collection. Observing that, this view apprehends this I to be either permanent or annihilated. Okay, so the view holding on to the extreme apprehends the I either to be permanent, to be, you know, eternal, as in being never disintegrating, never undergoing change, or it apprehends the I to as an I, as something that will cease to exist at the time of death, yeah. That it will disappear, go out of existence. So, like what Teck Wong said, right? So, I think you have to change because I think we just assumed that it was right, but I think it's a cut and paste error. So, what is observed by the conception of a bad view as supreme? So, the conception of a bad view as supreme observes any of those three. So, it is the view of the transitory collection, the view holding on to an extreme, and wrong view. So, these are the three things that are observed by this conception of a bad view as supreme. So, yeah, so the view, conception of a bad view as supreme observes these three and then holds them to be superior. Then you have conception of bad ethics and modes of conduct as supreme. Essentially, it's a mind that believes, that something which is not a cause of liberation to be a cause of liberation. It is a mind which believes that something which is not a path leading to liberation to be a path leading to liberation. Okay, so according to the compendium of knowledge, wrong view is any endurance, desire, intelligence, conception or view which deprecates cause, result or functionality and wrongly conceives existent disintegrating things. It has the function of severing roots of virtue, holding tightly to roots of non-virtue, and acting as a support for engaging in non-virtue and not engaging in virtue. Just as it has been said above, so it is an afflicted wisdom which views cause and effect, cause and results of actions, past and future lives, and so forth as non-existent. Yeah. So, yeah, so essentially a wrong view is a mind which views past and future lives, cause and effect, and the Four Noble Truths as non-existent. Yeah. Okay, you have any questions about these five views, the five afflicted views? Yes.
I just wonder, what's the difference?
this conception of bad ethics and mode of conduct as supreme, right? What is the difference between bad ethics and bad modes of conduct?
I would think that the modes of conduct are mainly related to physical and verbal activities. No? And there's stuff that you can do physically and verbally, you know, adopting certain kind of demeanor or conduct basically with your body and speech. Yeah. Ethics perhaps has more to do with mind. Yeah. So there are all sorts of, you could say immoral, right, unethical, which is the opposite of ethics, yeah. Conduct.
Since we're discussing these different types of wrong views, I'm just wondering whether do they, and then you mentioned there was a transitory collection and then the other two that arise. Do they arise simultaneously? That means, do these mental factors come up simultaneously in one mind at the same time, or do they arise distinctively?
So the five views don't arise simultaneously, but the basis of all the views is the view of the transitory collection. If that is the condition, then the other four views can arise, yeah. So the function of the view of the transitory collection is stated as acting as a support for all views, yeah. So yeah, for all the views, views means all the bad views, yeah. So, yeah. So if that's the case, then they don't arise, what do you call it, simultaneously, yeah.
No.
What
in the Shanta?
Okay, we will skip the discussion on the category of the afflicted views. And we will look at, we will just now look at the 20 secondary afflictions. Yeah. Belligerence. So according to the compendium of knowledge, belligerence is a malice when the cause of harm abides nearby, and it is involved with anger. It has the function of acting as a support for taking up weapons, punishing and so forth, and preparing to injure others. So just as has been said above, it's a malice that wishes to harm by striking and so forth when any of the 9 bases of malice abides nearby. So I've already given you the 9 bases of malice here before, so it's pretty much the same. So anger is classified as a root affliction, whereas belligerence is considered to be a secondary affliction. So then what is the so there's a discussion about the difference between the two, yeah. Since anger occurs in the context of root afflictions and belligerence in the context of secondary afflictions, what is the difference between anger and belligerence? So the response is, perhaps anger is an intolerant, malicious mind occurring when the 3 objects dawn as objects of observation, whereas belligerence is an extremely disturbed state of mind which, upon a great intensifying of anger, wishes to strike physically when the cause of anger abides nearby. So the source for this response is given in the compendium of knowledge, yeah? And also the another text by Vasubandhu. Compendium of knowledge refers to malice towards the 3 phenomena in the context of explaining anger, and when the cause of harm abides nearby, and taking up weapons and so forth, in the context of explaining belligerence. So, according to a discussion of the five aggregates, malice towards sentient beings is explained in the context of anger, and abides in causing immediate harm is explained in the context of the secondary affliction, belligerence. Therefore, having contemplated the presentations in these texts of Asanga and his brother, you may wonder whether they are just as they have been explained above. However, since these are very difficult to realize, the intelligent should analyze them in detail further. It is simply to be understood that anger acts as a support for harming others.
So that's the problem of the intelligent.
Either the author is saying that they are stupid, or the author is saying that we are stupid. because if they cannot analyze, then what do you expect us to do, right? No, that's a wonder.
So, okay, we leave there for the intelligent one to decide.
So the three objects of anger: sentient beings, suffering, and the origins or sources of suffering. These are the three phenomena.
So,
anger is a disturbed mind which arises, you know, when one sees those three phenomena, yeah? Sees them, hears of them, or when you think of them, then it's a disturbed mind which arises, yeah? Something that you are in betahan, basically. It literally is in the mind that cannot tahan, cannot tolerate. I think belligerence follows from anger. So belligerence arises, you know, when anger is very strong, isn't it? So belligerence is like a mind that wishes to just slap the daylight out of the guy, yeah, in there. You know, it's a wish to, you know, just whack the person or hit the person, or, you know, you do something to the person, you know, or the object of anger, basically. So I guess you can fire. You can lighten fire the anger to a small fire, yeah? And then, you know, the fire can be, you know, the fire can grow, become bigger, and when you start adding stuff, you know, like petrol, you know, then it becomes, you know, bigger, yeah. So, and when the fire is bigger, you know, it's like belligerence, right? So I guess this is what I think is the difference between anger and belligerence in terms of you know, strength.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, next is resentment. Resentment is a refusal to let go of thoughts of harm following that. That is belligerence. And it is involved with anger. It has the function of acting as a support for intolerance. So just as it has been said above, it is a mind that refusing to let go of a continuum of anger, no? So it wishes to harm or retaliate.
Yeah.
So, we have anger. Arising from anger is belligerence. No? And resentment is basically, you know, holding on to the causes of anger, no? In the mind, you know. Yeah, not letting go. So, just holding on to the causes of anger, yeah. So yeah, so in resentment is a mind that wishes to harm, you know, to return the harm. Or retaliate, yeah. You think about it, sometimes it seems that we are talking about the same thing, right? You know, anger, belligerence, resentment, as if, you know, wow, you know, they come, they go on a parade, you know, one by one they come, you know. But actually, it's all there, yeah. But then I think belligerence follows from anger. And then you have a resentment. So resentment is just, you know, cannot let go, you know, of this anger and belligerence. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and the function of resentment is said to be, acting as a support for intolerance. Yeah. Intolerance. Misoba. Okay, next is concealment. So according to the Compendium of Knowledge, concealment is a hiding of misdeeds when one is justly accused and is involved with ignorance. So it has the function of acting as a support for not abiding in contact with regret. Abiding in contact.
今天嘛，俺那些几位新人说，说新的，让他偏不得了，身边人把领不嘛，怎么个？你把爸爸的路西过，是当兵人把亲人嘛，吃不吃不新的呢？你把，你把中央全部别的叫把当，带完了再把明年别，前行，起码你送，起码你送的偏远，你去，高兴，给我是一方，偏嘛嘛罗。
So, just it has been said above, yeah. So, concealment is an awareness that wishes to hide faults through the force of ignorance. When another person, such as a spiritual guide, benignly points out one's faults, so refusing to accept one's own faults, this concealment causes even small faults to greatly increase. It serves as a cause for not abiding in contact with regret and with happiness, and as the function of impelling one into lower rebirths in future lives. So concealment is essentially camouflage, hiding, you know, the hiding, you know, essentially that's what, hiding, you know, the faults, yeah, one's faults, yeah.
어떻게 딱 지레디 가르스나 아니 교가 깨다 아니 객체 딱 교가 김무트 아따가 나시 안 대발라 아라만 냠마트 딱 지레디 숨어야
So the, what concealment does to us is that it prevents us from generating regret, yeah. Also obstructs us from abiding in happiness,
yeah.
So the essential point behind this is that we shouldn't conceal our misdeeds or faults. Should not conceal misdeeds, negativities, yeah. But rather we should confess it and purify it immediately, yeah. So through applying regret, yeah. So because if we conceal and therefore not confessing it, then even small negativities can multiply and increase, yeah.
真的，真的，生活都发达变了，都变了，甚至变了不幸，都不穷穷的失败，那他得把他妈失败，那倒下去了，你就是得把钱给他塞进那用过的嘛，给他妈失败了。So
for example, it is mentioned in the teachings that, you know, that the negative karma from killing a bug, small little insect, if you conceal the negativity without confessing it, then, you know, after a period of time, such as a month, the karma increases, you know, such that it becomes, you know, similar in strength to a karma of having killed a human being. Yeah. And if through concealment, then one doesn't confess, you know, one's faults and negativities, then these negativities then increase, then and the result is a lower realm rebirth, yeah.
제대 다진도 도시 상권에 샤고 치고 그랬어. 다니래. 바도신이 기송해. 다진도 치두나 안에 집다 뒤바 폐셔 가야. 폐마도 바진도 송해.
So therefore, you know, it's mentioned in the teachings that, you know, we should confess our negativities daily through the application of the four opponent powers. Yeah. So at least, you know, this prevents the negativities from increasing in strength. Yeah.
Mm.
So, for example, it is often said in the teachings that if we do the practice of reciting the 100 syllable mantra of Vajrasattva at least 21 times a day, that has the effect of preventing one's negativities from increasing. So it's important to confess and one's negativities and purify them with application of the four opponent powers. But if you look at the crux of purification, the essential, the heart of it, it lies in having regret for the past, having committed the negativities, and having a mind of restraint from committing these negativities in the future. So regret is very important. So with regret, you're able to purify. And it is only with regret that one will have a mind of restraint, of not wanting to do this again in the future, isn't
it?
So this is the crux of the heart or the essence of purification or confession, applying these powers as, in particular, regret and attitude of restraint. But without applying these and just reciting 21 times the 100 syllable mantra a day and then saying that it will stop the negativities from increasing, that is something that we perhaps need to analyze.
If you
recite 21 times the 100 syllable mantra of Vajrasattva daily, but without having any regret or restraint, your recitation of the 21 times recitation of the mantra does nothing to stop you from committing the negativity again tomorrow. Then again, it's the same thing that happens. Then what are you going to do? Without regret and restraint, just reciting the mantra doesn't do anything, isn't it?
Again, 21 times.
It's 42 times, no? 21, 21 for the 21. Oh,
how loud. What did they say?
Okay, next is spite. So according to the Companion of Knowledge, spite is a malicious mind that is preceded by belligerence and resentment. It is involved with anger. It is the function of acting as a support for rough, violent speech to increase that which is non-meritorious and not abiding in contact. Just as he has, just as he has been said above, it's an awareness which, for instance, lacking thoughts of regret and admission when another points out one's faults, wishes to utter harsh speech out of hateful thoughts and driven by belligerence and resentment. So, spite is a derivative of anger, yeah. And spite is a derivative of anger, and it is preceded by belligerence and resentment.
Yeah.
So I think spite is occurs, you know, when anger is strong, yeah, getting stronger and stronger, right? And acting out of spite, you know, then, you know, one engages in it says here, rough, violent speech. So, see, if you look at the development of these various minds, let's say in sequence, so it's a derivative of anger, isn't it? So you have anger, then comes belligerence, yeah. Then from belligerence, then you have this spite, you know. So, you know, you reach a point in time, you know, when you know you are almost ready, you know, so ready to, you know, to say, to utter harsh speech. Yeah. So these three belligerence, resentment, and then you have spite. These three come from the origin, or kind of like, you know, coming, all come from anger, yeah. So the antidote for dealing with these three are essentially also the antidotes for dealing with anger, isn't it? So in order to manage our anger, so there's the cultivation of concern for others, love, yeah, and with respect to the sources of suffering or one's problems and one's experience of pain and so forth, we just have to realize that those are the fruitional effects of one's own negative karma accumulated in the past, yeah. So the way to think about how, you know, all our bad experiences are the results of our own, the ripening of our own karma, is to just reflect on what is what we've learned in the Lambrim, in the stages of the path. Yeah. So in the section of Lambrim, in the karma, when we talk about the general characteristics of karma, yeah. So the first characteristic of karma is that it is definite. Yeah. Actions are, karma is definite. So what does it mean? Karma is definite means that virtuous action will only result in happiness. And a non-virtuous action will only result in suffering.
Rangla tungal chungati, rangla mitawa kangju the rangi lele tan chuan samtan dukala, and it's kung chana, simchi shendang, dungadang, tindeshi chin dukala, and kundu go to the yuguyare.
So when we're able to reflect in this way and understand, realize this, yeah, the karma is definite, yeah. Then in relation to our own problems, our experience of pain, suffering, or when we have interferences, you know, from hindrances, from facing problems from others, then if we realize that it is essentially is an experience of our own actions that we've done in the past, it helps, you know, in us to manage our anger. Yeah. So if you remember the four qualities that makes one a trainee in virtue, the four qualities, so if you remember those, so essentially they are methods for help us to manage our belligerence, resentment, and spite. Yeah. So this is how we have to start the training. Yeah. We start from taking the first step, you know, using these four practices. Yeah. So what are they? You know? Even when derided or when scolded, you know, do not deride in return. Even when someone gets angry at us, do not get angry in return. Then even when hit, do not hit back. Even when faults, once faults are exposed, then do not expose others' faults. So it says if someone gets angry at us, we try not to get angry in return. Yeah. So which means not getting upset inside, and also externally, you know, not to show, display you know, this, you know, the demeanor, it's like, you know, the showing the seeing an upset or black face. Yeah. Main thing is to relax, you know, the mind, you know, not to, you know, get so uptight, you know, with anger. And so even when derided, so when something nasty is said to us, then we should not return in kind immediately, you know, or immediately react. So, you know, even when derided, no, we do not deride in return. That means we do not retaliate immediately. That doesn't mean just not retaliating. No. You know, you might be thinking, bloody hell, no, I didn't say anything this time. I'm practicing. I didn't say anything this time. In the second time, you know, you externally we don't react, yeah, but internally, yeah. Whatever, you know. So, it doesn't help, yeah. Essentially, that's not the practice, because the mind is not relaxed. You see, the mind is still uptight. You know, so there's still unhappiness and what you call that, resentment and so forth. Yeah, so it's not just not retaliating. You know, but you know, it is actually a loosening up of the mind and it's just letting go of it. Yeah. Yeah, so the main thing is to let go in the mind of the unhappiness, you know? Because you know, even if you don't react externally, but inside we cannot let go. It doesn't really help at the end of the day, right? And also, if we remember our own mortality, our impending death, yeah, or that we definitely one day we're going to go, you know, and the time is really uncertain. You know, so, if we really, you know, understand that, you know, then guess maybe, you know, we will not hold on to these things very long in the mind. You know, it happens sometimes, you know, but you know, when we think about death, impermanence, you know, then it may arise, but you know, it doesn't stay, perhaps it doesn't bother us so much, it doesn't stay very long in the mind. Yeah. So, in fact, all the antidotes we already know. It's all in the lumbrim. It's just a matter of doing it, yeah. I mean, there isn't any better solution or antidotes to all these problems, no, than the ones that you find in the lumbrim. Everything is there. In the stages of the path, yeah, the enlightenment, yeah. Okay, next is what? Jealousy, right? Okay. So according to the Compendium of Knowledge, jealousy is a deep disturbance of mind that cannot tolerate another's marvelous attributes due to excessive attachment to gain and honor, and it is involved with hatred, and it is the function of causing mental unhappiness and of not abiding in contact. So, jealousy is a deep disturbance of mind that cannot bear another's success. Due to attachment to gain and honor, it produces serious undesirable consequences in both this and future lives. In this life, there will be mental unhappiness, and in future lives, one will be impelled into bad migrations. Then what is miserliness? It is a thorough holding of the mind to possessions due to excessive attachment to gain and honor. Gain and honor, and is involved with attachment, a derivative of attachment. So it has the function of acting as a support for non-diminishment of possessions. Okay, so just it has been said above, it is the tight holding that is unable to let go of possessions through the force of attachment to gain and honor. It produces serious undesirable consequences in both this and future lives. So jealousy and miserliness arise mainly due to attachment. Yeah, attachment for or attachment to gain, which includes material stuff and so forth. So I think the function of miserliness is that it causes an attachment to increase. And when you have miserliness, one cannot develop contentment. Next is deceit. Thank you. So what is deceit? It is a display of what is not one's good quality due to excessive attachment to gain and honor, and is involved with attachment and ignorance. It has the function of acting as a support for wrong livelihood. Just as has been said above, deceit is a display of good qualities one does not actually possess due to excessive attachment to gain and honor, as in the case of pretending to be peaceful and subdued with the thought to deceive others, even though one's own mind is far from being subdued. So okay, so this is a deceit. Essentially, is a this you know, cheating others, you know, trying, you know, basically, essentially pretending to have qualities that one doesn't have, and then pretending to meditate when you're not meditating, for example. Looking holy, yeah, basically. So wrong livelihood is five types, yeah, isn't it? Pretension, flattery, hinting, extortion, seeking gain from gain. Pretension is explained above, an external pretense towards others, feigning good qualities one does not have. Flattery is to speak smooth words in conformity with the minds of others for the sake of gain and honor. Hinting is to first flatter others and then praise their possessions out of attachment to gain. Extortion is to speak about the faults of great miserliness and the light for the sake of gain. And seeking gain from gain is to seek gain by praising in the presence of another what one has previously obtained, saying, "Oh, previously so and so gave me such and such." And that was very helpful. So in brief, without guarding the stipulated boundaries of the trainings, even wandering to ask for alms in the village out of attachment to gain and honor is thought to be wrong livelihood. Therefore, if you do not wish to be defiled by wrong livelihood, do not seek to ingratiate yourself with others and protect without the duplicity the stipulated boundaries of the Vinaya in a place of solitude. Well, you know, if you live in a society, right, and the opportunities or the dangers of engaging in wrong livelihood is always there, yeah. So it is safer to go into isolation. Next is dissimulation. I think some people translate it as guile, deceit and guile. But dissimulation here, yo. So what is dissimulation? It commits faults due to excessive attachment to gain and honor, and is involved with attachment and ignorance. It has the function of hindering the acquisition of perfect instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Just it has been said above, it's an awareness that wishes to hide one's faults, not revealing them to others through the force of attachment to gain and honor. So essentially, dissimulation is a mind that wishes to hide one's fault out of attachment to gain and honor. Nowadays, hiding our faults, we act smart and clever if we can get away with it. But going by the yardstick of Dharma, we have deceived ourselves. So as the engaging in the Bodhisattva deeds say, I am constantly dwelling in the presence of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas who are always endowed with unobscured vision. By thinking this way, I shall develop a sense of shame, respect, and fear. Since these two, deceit and dissimulation, hinder the acquisition of perfect instructions in this life and produce various kinds of undesirable consequences in future lives, not meeting with the Mahayana virtuous friends, Mahayana gurus, not gaining perfect instructions and so forth, deceit and dissimulation are enumerated among the four black dharmas in the questions of Kashyapa. Well, is there a difference between concealment and dissimulation? They seem to be talking about the same thing, no? Thank you. You is deceit. You. Dissimulation and defeat.
That this should be that Chabot in this to be your pen a cousin at the Chabas to Gala, that Nyaba Nyabam.
So concealment observes one's misdeeds, one's faults, and he has the aspect of concealing it, yeah? Keeping it secret, right? And dissimulation, you know, has the aspect of striving, you know, in whatever ways, you know, to conceal those faults.
That 샤바스도 냐바디 베베 남아지스 다 유스도 냐바디 베탑조에 남아지스
야
샤바스 차나서 차보다
so if you differentiate concealment and what a dissimulation in such a way so concealment has the aspect of just concealing basically one's faults yeah whereas the aspect of dissimulation is you're actually striving to you know doing whatever to hide and those mistakes faults yeah So the essential advice here is that you know there's no way to hide. There's no way to conceal or hide the faults because they are seen realized by all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Yeah. So the point is to purify, confess the mistakes immediately. In the presence of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas.
What is the name of the Kuba Japanese? And what about the Tunic Kapa Kanshana? Name about the long so Baba Tenjin, Tim, Samar, Sabana, the presence of Kayano, Tony, Bosha, Charlotte, Kapa, Kawa, Idiwa, this, Nimuba, Nimuba, Tamsik, Tenjin, the Shenos.
Number nine is haughtiness. So haughtiness is a joy and mental happiness upon seeing one's own good health, youth, signs of long life, or contaminated success. And it's involved with attachment, and it's the function of acting as a support for all the afflictions and root and secondary. Just as it has been said above, so haughtiness is a puffing up of the mind due to joy and mental happiness upon observing one's own good health, prosperity, and so forth. Since it produces all afflictions, it acts as the root of non-conscientiousness. The exhortation to the exceptional resolve says, this haughtiness is the root of all non-conscientiousness. Do not deride an inferior fully ordained monk. You will not attain liberation in an aeon. This is the sequence in this teaching. And the letter to a friend also says, look upon haughtiness on account of youth or greatness of lineage, physique, learning or power as an enemy. So, I mean, in general, I mean, having good health, prosperity, you know, and being born in a good lineage, having a nice physical appearance and so forth, these are essentially ideal, yeah, okay? But if one doesn't know how to think, then these things can become a cause
for developing haughtiness.
Okay, so haughtiness arises, or haughtiness is said to be a derivative of attachment, yeah. But what about the difference between haughtiness and pride, let's say? Think about it.
Any different?
Haughtiness is a puffing up of the mind due to joy and mental happiness upon observing one's own good health, prosperity, and so forth. Whereas pride observes something different, right? Find the page here. So whereas pride is a puffing up of the mind upon observing one's own wealth, qualities, and so forth. Yeah. So haughtiness is what? Good health and possessions, right? The basis for pride is one's own wealth and qualities, yeah. Haughtiness involves mental happiness and joy. You feel good, you know, that you're puffed up, you know. But pride doesn't necessarily, you know, it comes with, you know, mental happiness and joy, you know. Right? Perhaps this is the difference. So one wonders, you know, whether you know, pride involves a puffing up of the mind, and coming along and along with it, you know, comes, you know, with this all these mental happiness and joy. You know. Okay, so we hope to finish the rest of the secondary afflictions on Tuesday.
sushi.
Something they have been dying to know for a long time. That Lee Hsien Loong said he's not going to scrap PSLE, so we are not going to scrap the exam as well. It is tentatively subject to change, could be subject to change, tentatively scheduled for the 14th of October at 3 p.m. Yeah, 3 p.m. Okay, so as I said before, exam is not shouldn't be a cause of worry or stress. You just try your best, basically. You just try your best to study whatever you can, and you come for the exam. Essentially, it's just to for yourself to know how much you know, yeah. Isn't it? It's just a guide, and it's just a gauge, you know. That's all. So exams are useful, you know. Exams are useful because, you know, when we have exams, you know, then, you know, we are more likely to look at the book, you know. Otherwise, you know, the book tends to be ignored. So therefore, the examination is very kind. Okay, I think we'll finish for today, yeah. So, je veux que